After Action Review with Rod Rodriguez.
And welcome to episode 8 of the After Action Review. I'm your host, Rod Rodriguez. And in this episode, we're going to be talking about identity. Now, identity is a theme that has been running through every one of the podcast interviews with veteran entrepreneurs. And there's a good reason for that, because identity is such an important and integral part of who we are and how we identify ourselves. Now, identity can be a strange thing to consider. Most people go their entire lives never really talking about how they see themselves or how they might be perceived by others. It's more of an internal discussion most of the time. Maybe we don't talk about it because, in a way, that discussion is kind of uncomfortable, kind of scary. We may not like how others see us. We may not like who they think we are in contrast to who we want to actually be. Do we even know who we really want to be at our core? Now, few occupations lend themselves to the crisis of identity like that of the professional military service member. It's a topic, like I said, that's been brought up before on this podcast, and everyone acknowledges that there is a certain identity adoption that takes place when you enter the service. Whether you're becoming a soldier, a marine, a sailor, or an airman, there is an adoption of a new identity. It's part of a rite of passage for many young people into what we could call manhood or womanhood. In many cultures, when that transition occurs, the child is often taken from their family home and put through some kind of trial or a test to determine their worth or readiness for that next step in their culture's chain of importance or responsibility. For the service member, they voluntarily submit themselves to that challenge in the form of going through basic training. Now, for vets looking back on basic or boot, it's kind of a joke. We've gone through a lot, so much more after years of experience, that the experience itself of basic training or boot pales in comparison. But for a moment, consider that most people, most Americans, will never push themselves to a physical or mental extreme that even slightly resembles the basic training experience. So think of that as the first barrier, a gate kept by drill sergeants and drill instructors. It's the first of many tests, but it's the one you have to pass to get to the other ones. Now, during that process, we assimilate to the branch we've chosen. We're introduced to a new way of speaking, acting, listening, moving. You even adopt a new name at the beginning, whether it's private or recruit. You voluntarily push your first name, the name given to you, to the side and adopt the same name as the person next to you. We become part of a collective and accept that, for example, I am Private Rodriguez. Now, for the next however many years, you will adopt a new name based on the rank you earn. It's a 50-50 system. I keep my family name, but it's still a reminder that I am not an individual. I am part of a larger family unit. My rank is not unique either. I am one of many sergeants, many officers. Now, veteran entrepreneurs complicate the process even more by adopting a new title, a new mantle, that of business owner or artist or podcaster. It's an interesting process because we seem to use the same mechanics we adopted in the military, but just for business. I haven't met a veteran entrepreneur yet who said, "I'm John Doe, former Marine, and I make t-shirts on the side." I have heard, "I'm Marine veteran John Doe, owner of XYZ t-shirt company or CEO of XYZ LLC." They adopt that identity of business owner on top of so many other layers of identity. Now, I had a chance to talk to former Army Infantry Officer Jamie Ghidorie about identity, among a few other topics. Jamie is a self-described former workaholic, husband, father, grad student, entrepreneur, and disciple of Jesus. That's a lot of hats to wear at the same time, especially that last one. Now, I'm not a religious person, to say the very least, but there is something that seems particularly heavy about the hat labeled disciple of anything. And Jamie's early experience with identity adoption with the Army isn't so dissimilar to that of most other veterans who joined at an early age.
Went into the military at age 19 and was completely absorbed from the beginning, which is kind of a typical experience. It was almost like I wanted to be that uniform, right? I wanted that to absorb me, and I let it absorb me.
Jamie adopted the identity of soldier and for many years excelled at being that. He would graduate Ranger School, Special Operations Combat Diver School, Mountain Warfare Course, and go on to deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan during the years when fighting was at its fiercest. Looking back on this identity of Jamie Ghidorie, the professional soldier, officer, leader, Jamie finds that something was missing from how he not just viewed himself, but who he really wanted to be.
You're looking for that identification. You're looking for that, who am I, right? That kind of the core questions of that kind of stage of development, right? Who am I? And And in my walk, that had become such a big thing that my identity as a Christian had kind of shriveled, had really, that's the best way to put it, had shriveled.
So he started to reconsider a lot about his life. Who was he at his core? Prioritizing which hats to wear always and which were situational.
Part of when I got out and working through that process and going through again, who am I now that I'm out of uniform, was realizing that, you know, for years, for decades, I'd said that my primary identity was following Jesus. And yet that was not really the case, right? That wasn't the reality. And so when you look at the things that veterans struggle with in that identity crisis, in that shift, I think a huge part of it does have to do with what's my central identity. You know, I'm going to wear many hats, I'm going to wear many roles, but if you just peel all that away, what remains? Like, who is Jamie Ghidorey? And I know you've got to know what that is, right? You've got to know at the core, who am I? And for me, when it's stripped away, Jamie Ghidorey desires to be a follower of Jesus. I say desires to be because many times my life says otherwise, right? It's a struggle, but that's who I am at my core.
Now, Jamie isn't the only one struggling with identity. The country as a whole seems to be struggling with the identity of the U.S. military veteran. What does it mean to be a veteran? Now, the qualifications to be a veteran are pretty clear, but what does it actually mean to be one at its core? Jamie and I discussed the recent shootings in Dallas and Baton Rouge, both targeting police officers and both committed by veterans. Now, I've long felt that veterans have enjoyed something of a golden age among the civilian populace. Compare how today's returning service members from deployments are treated from those who returned from Vietnam, and it doesn't take much to convince anyone that we enjoy a level of respect and adoration not seen since perhaps World War II. Now, these recent shootings temporarily put the spotlight once again on the mental health of veterans. I say once again because prior to those shootings, the Mission 22 movement was picking up steam, 22 being a hotly contested number of veteran suicides a day, veteran hospital scandals, suicides, and a general unsat condition of veterans with health care provided by the government had already been at the forefront of much of the American public consciousness. But these shootings brought to light something more sinister. It seemed to bring into question, for some, the potential dangers posed by veterans with mental health issues. So, is the veterans' golden age coming to an end? Will veterans be discriminated against because they have the potential for PTSD?
I'm glad that it hasn't gone that route, just because I think that's kind of a knee jerk, right? Like, okay, you know, it's sort of the stereotype. If a veteran suffers from PTSD, then therefore they are a liability, right?
Right.
And versus, okay, there's more to the story than that. And it can be very easy to just dumb it down to the simplest form and say, well, there it is, a veteran, therefore we should be suspicious. But it is kind of ironic because some of the things that you're teasing out here in this conversation, we're having national conversations about stereotypes in general of many different forms. And a person from one group does something and all of a sudden everyone in that group is the same way. And whether it's the embedded tacit kind of stereotypes that are there, or the implicit stereotypes or more overt ones, we're struggling with that as a society right now.
Jamie understands better than most the capabilities of veterans, and people for that matter, the horrible lows, and their ability to summon courage to rise above even when the price is terribly high. One of the projects that Jamie worked on after leaving the Army and finding work as a multimedia case study project manager for a veteran-owned company was interviewing Justin Watt. Now, let's stop here for a moment and talk about who Justin Watt is and why he's relevant to the conversation of identity. I'm going to give a very abbreviated version of the story, which honestly does the whole thing no justice. I will say that outside Justin Watt and the individuals who investigated the case, Jamie Ghidorey is someone I would consider an authority on the subject. But more importantly, he's an authority on the lessons that came from what transpired. You see, in 2006, five U.S. soldiers deployed to Mamadiyeh, Iraq. They raped and murdered a 14-year-old girl, set her house on fire, murdered the family. One of those five soldiers confided to PFC Justin Watt what had actually happened. Now, Justin came forward with information effectively becoming a whistleblower.
Justin was the guy that had to say, okay, even though no one else in my organization is stepping forward, even though some people know or suspect what has happened, I'm going to go bring this up and basically turn in people who I work with, who have done something that's very horrible.
This incident brought up a lot of questions very much in the same light as the Abu Ghraib scandal. Although this incident is not remembered by many Americans, it was a situation that at the time garnered a lot of criticism and negative attention here in the U.S. and internationally. But Jamie also sees something in how we reacted to the situation, parallels perhaps some of today's issues with how law enforcement is being perceived.
We're becoming a little bit more accustomed as an American culture to question, right? And to say, okay, maybe something was going on here that shouldn't have, we should look into this more. And instead of a reaction being, well, that's impossible, that couldn't have happened, instead saying, okay, maybe that did happen. And unfortunately, some of that's because just the publicity that's come around some of these and the fact that some of these things have come to life, we now know better, right? We now know that, yes, we're capable of this, even though we look at the American warrior and the American fighting force, whether it's the Army, Marines, or any of the other sister services, as extremely professional, and yet we still realize, hey, it's made up of people, and yes, there is the potential for this. So I think that what's one of the things that's different is that with the protracted war, these things have come to light, and we now realize, okay, we're not perfect. And when these things happen, we need to investigate them. Unfortunately, it's so hard for pendulums to swing just back and forth in just crazy directions, right? And so you maybe start with a position that says, we can do no wrong because we're a professional force, which is, I forget which logical fallacy that is, but it's one of them, right? Or you swing it the other way and say, well, because these things happen, that just says everybody's bad, right? And we're obviously in our culture right now, we're wrestling with some of those issues in terms of, do we demonize everybody? One that's in a particular uniform or from a particular demographic, and or do we say that they can never do wrong? And it's, I think that's kind of a human thing, right? Our brain seems to like to put things in buckets and categories that we can just keep separate. But the reality is that there may be things that are, if you will, competing truths that, you know, yeah, we've got a great, and you know, in Justin's case, yeah, we've got an incredible professional fighting force that unfortunately these things have happened and these things can happen and these things do happen. How are we going to honor that whistleblower who steps forward?
Unfortunately, the story of Justin Watt doesn't exactly have a good ending. He was persecuted, threatened, and generally hung out to dry for revealing the entire situation. Jamie finds in this experience interviewing Justin Watt a regular person with an extraordinary story.
I got a chance to interview Justin Watt, who I have immense respect for, as just, he would probably consider himself kind of a regular guy, but who did just extraordinary things in the face of adversity, and is one of really the most impactful set of interviews that I've done was with Justin and some of the people that he used to work with. Again, it's that everybody's got a story, and it's fascinating what that, and I think that's been one of my big takeaways of having done all that, is the stories that don't necessarily make the headlines, right, of just the common folks like you and I, who have an experience, and that experience is worth telling. It's worth hearing. It's worth learning from. And it's helped kind of set me on that trajectory.
Jamie is fascinated by the story everyone has to tell. In fact, you could say that in a way, Jamie is a professional listener. So what does someone with an extensive military background, training, and experience in listening to ordinary people tell extraordinary stories do with his life? How about balancing grad school and growing a consultancy?
I'm in somewhere around the second year, and I say somewhere around because I started off slow, but somewhere around the second year in my graduate studies, working on a master's in counseling, using the 9/11 GI Bill for that. At the same time, trying to build a bit of a consultancy as a sole proprietor, doing organizational development, leadership development type of work.
But Jamie's not interested in just traditional counseling. Like he said earlier, it's taken him a while, but he feels confident that he's found who he is, that core identity. That's why Jamie decided to dive into the specific realm of Christian counseling.
As a Christian, I get to kind of study these things in an environment where faith is not just kind of sprinkled on top. Really blessed with some professors who have great credentials in the psychological community, in the counseling community, and they continue to push to say, okay, how do you integrate this as a believer? And obviously we look to scripture, to the Bible for an understanding of just people in general, right? And how do you integrate that in terms of what we might call the more scientific part of it, or what's kind of emerged over the last century or so in terms of more data-based studies of the human, of the psyche, if you will.
So what we have in Jamie Guidori is first and foremost a Christian, self-described disciple of Jesus. Now, as a guy who is not so spiritually inclined, this makes me wonder about how this affects his identity as an entrepreneur, as a business consultant. Is there a schism between what one aspires to be and the job one is doing?
there shouldn't be this separation, right? If I'm following God, if I'm a follower of Jesus, that should be all of life. And there shouldn't be a distinction between Sunday morning. And you know, you can talk integrity, and a lot of times we talk about integrity in the sense of it being honesty and truthfulness. But in this course and in other places, I've kind of seen integrity talking about as wholeness, right? That I'm the same person throughout these circumstances. And so for me, my hope is that more and more that it's going to be something natural that comes through. Will there be conflicts? Perhaps, you know, whether it's ethical or something else that, you know, hey, I just can't go down this road because of my faith. Yeah, absolutely. That can and may happen. For me right now, it's how do I honor my clients, right? How do I honor them as people? And how do I honor the good that they're doing and the good that the organization's doing? And for that, I've been really helped by some heads a lot smarter than mine to see, okay, if truly I'm looking at life that God has created the universe and has created people and has created work, when we are doing things that are good, if you will, like let's just take medicine, right? If I'm doing something in medicine, I'm helping people, I'm bringing healing to people. When we do that, we're reflecting that nature of God that He's designed us in. And that's a good thing. And so in work, if I'm working with a client and just the organization itself working together to achieve an end, those are good things, you know, the livelihood that people have. So what I'm doing is seeing the positive, right? And seeing the fact that there's goodness here that I can help bring about. And so specifically the work that I do in building teams and in advising leadership teams on decisions, or where are the friction points, where are the relational gaps, how do we have more clarity together as a team, how do we have more cohesiveness. I become a servant to that organization, to that leadership team that my faith impacts, is because my desire is for your good. If you're my client, I want to see good come out of this. I want to serve you in a way that you and your organization are better as a result. And that's the godly thing to do in the moment.
What Jamie's doing is pouring his heart and soul into his study as a Christian counselor, as well as building his consultancy. He does those things by embracing an identity he worked very hard in discovering. So does this mean that diving into one's spiritual beliefs or faith-based practice will ultimately lead you to finding who you are at your core? Does there exist an entrepreneurial nirvana? Maybe. That's perhaps a bigger question than any podcast is capable of answering. Identity is a personal journey, period. And it's one with frequent stops, too. Who you are today may not be who you are in a year from now. Students graduate, become professionals, a private becomes a sergeant, a small business owner could become a corporate CEO. Even what we consider as the archetype for a veteran can change over the years. I used to think of veterans as those old guys hanging out at VFWs wearing trucker hats full of small military pins. That's an identity I didn't want to adopt, a community I didn't really want to be a part of because I didn't understand it. Today's veterans are trying to find their identity, and they're certainly trying to be unique about it. From small pins in a hat to Ranger panty ruck marches in downtown Austin, veterans are expressing their identity as veterans, but in a way that brings us all closer with our older hat pin wearing veteran brothers and sisters who didn't have the liberty to exercise their identity as veterans as easily and as accepted as the modern vet. At the end of the day, we're all individuals with unique stories, unique identities, with strong similarities with one another, but nevertheless, we're all unique and we're all growing. I want to thank Jamie Ghidorie for taking the time to talk with me. Always an enlightening conversation with that guy. If you're looking for the very best in organizational development, from problem solving, team building, to leadership development, Jamie Ghidorie is ready to serve you and your organization's mission. Drop him a line at jamie@outsiderconsulting.com. Again, that's jamey@outsiderconsulting.com. Folks, that's a wrap for this episode. Thank you for listening. Those of you who've listened to this podcast before will certainly recognize a difference in the format. I'd love to hear what you think. Hit me up at the website, www.theaarpodcast.com, or on Facebook, facebook.com/theaarpodcast. I'm going to be on the road soon, headed to the Virginia area for a couple of weeks. So if you're a veteran entrepreneur or you know somebody that is on the East Coast in that Virginia, D.C. area, drop me a line. Let's talk. As always, be sure to leave a review on iTunes and or Google Play, and I'll see you at episode 9.
Hopefully you can pull something out of this.